Word on the street is that Barack Obama, during his presidency, only had 7 outfits that he wore on a cycling schedule. I don't know if he had an aide who made sure he didn't wear the same suit every single Monday, or if he was totally fine wearing the same thing every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday, as the previous Monday, previous Tuesday, previous Wednesday. The philosophy behind this, though, is something that you will see commonly practiced by many of the most successful people in society. And that is the idea that we are all prone to decision fatigue. So when we have more options and we have to make more decisions, the quality of the decisions we make degrades over the course of a 24-hour day. Each day we have a bucket of quality decisions in us, and every decision we make degrades the quality of the next decision. So you'll notice that people like Steve Jobs, always dressed in black. Again, Barack Obama wore the same 7 outfits on basically just a recurring cycle. A lot of people will eat the same food for lunch and breakfast every day. The only meal that they really choose what it's going to be typically is dinner. We do this a lot in our daily rituals. We don't decide when to brush our teeth. We just schedule it and get it done. We don't decide when to shower. We just schedule it and get it done. You typically are going to be either a nighttime shower or a morning shower. You'll know these things about yourself. And you do it somewhat unconsciously because you need to offload as many decisions as possible so that you are fresh to make the best decisions. And yet, there are commercials on TV. I recently saw one by a major car company that said, "Everyone knows more options is better." That is not true. More options leads to indecision or poor decisions. And so maybe if you want to sell somebody something like the big car company, you do try to overload them with decisions so that you can make them make a bad decision. But typically, when you talk to the best marketers in the world, fewer decisions is better. What does all this have to do with book marketing? Today's episode, we are going to discuss the rapid release method of publishing. We're going to talk pros and cons. I'm going to try to dive as deeply as I can into both sides and see where we land. Thank you very much to Dr. Sheena Howard for throwing this question at me. She has a book right now that is traditionally published, and her publisher is doing something that's almost unheard of in this day and age. They are publicizing and promoting the book for her and well after publication. So good on them. For those of us who are self-publishing and have a choice on rapid release, and because Dr. Howard wanted to kind of sift through this topic, and because I've been thinking about doing this in terms of it is a marketing strategy, I wanted to dive into it now. So let us get after it. This is TRBM, a podcast for authors who are serious about earning a full-time living selling books to readers. I'm the host, Jody J. Sperling, and each episode, I'll share with you practical tips on marketing and selling your books. And I won't hold anything back. Sometimes I fail. Every time I do, you'll know it. Sometimes I succeed. And when I do, I'll give you my step-by-step replay so you can succeed too. Thanks for listening. Right out of the gate, I want to define rapid release. I had a guest on the podcast some time ago, Joanna Penn. She talked a little bit about this, and so I'm going to refresh your memory if you're newer to TRBM. Rapid release is when you are putting out books within weeks or months of each other, and you're doing this to leverage the algorithm specifically on Amazon. So when we talk about rapid release, in almost every case, we are discussing exclusively an Amazon targeted strategy. Because Amazon has a window of time, it changes. And so there are some people out there who will definitively say that you get 30, 60, or 90 days where you are more visible after the publication of a book than you are following that period of time. It's hard to find something currently, even if you look at like Dave from Kindlepreneur, that says for sure that the visibility window is a certain set time, but we know that it's something within that 90-day window where the algorithm gives you a slight, possibly noticeable boost to readers. And so rapid release is focusing on Amazon and taking advantage of that visibility window. When you publish another book within that 90-day window, so a second book following the first, then both books become even more visible. So if you were able to publish three books and the window was 90 days, then it would triple your visibility. Each of those books would piggyback off of the next and be more visible because of your strategy. You might get book one in a series, book two and book three in a series, all getting a lot of visibility and playing off each other. So a customer who buys book one then will see book two and book three a lot when they're looking for their next thing to read. It can be beneficial. You will hear a lot of authors who have had great success doing this. And there's something important to know, which is that you don't want to write for rapid release. If you choose this strategy to leverage Amazon's algorithm, you need to have those books ready to go ahead of time. So instead of thinking of it like rapid release, try to think of it as strategic release. If it takes you 4 months to write a book, or if it takes you a year to write a book, you don't release anything until you have all three of those books in this illustration ready to go. So you have maybe a year between each book. That's a little bit long, I think, for most self-published authors. I fall somewhere in the 9-month average to get a book ready to go. But if it takes you a year, then you're going to be writing for 3 years without publishing anything. And then at the end of that 3 years, you have three books that are ready to release as rapid release. So you'll put one out in January, maybe you'll put out another one in February, and then you'll put out another one in March. Good job, Jody. You can count your months in order. When you do that, you get that effect of all of the books being promoted with each other. Do I think that this is the best strategy to get visibility, more readers, more sales? Emphatically, I do not. Emphatically, I do not. Rapid release, even done properly, like we just discussed, has some major drawbacks. Yes, people have been successful. Yes, people have leveraged Amazon. Yes, people have built email lists and all kinds of things off of doing this when their book is properly structured to be on Amazon, and they're able to grab people's email addresses through selling a book on Amazon with content at the back or front of the book that says, hey, subscribe to my newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. We can talk about that in another episode, but essentially you are still beholden to the Amazon system. And when you rapid release, there are ripple effects in other areas of the world, the book world, that will play against you. So if you are the kind of person who has done in-person shows, then you're probably familiar with the idea that you can sell a three-book deal to somebody who's walking around looking for things to buy. They walk up to your table and you say, hey, I've got one book for $18, I have two for $30, or three for $40. My best deal is three for $40. You can grab all three if this series sounds like something you'd like, and dive in now for the best possible price you're going to get anywhere. That's really cool, and you'll notice that even then you see a small amount of interaction between those sales and the other activities of rabid or voracious readers of work. It just so happens that people tend to have an appetite for one author that they do want to read through, and then maybe you will get the ones out there who read quickly and jump into the next one weeks later. However, you also have a large number of people who read at a slower pace but are still core to what you are doing. Some people will take many months to read your next book. And if that's the case, then you don't benefit from the rapid release structure anyway, because they're not going to be out looking for their next book. And those people maybe would benefit from a slightly slower trickle. That is the least of the benefits of slowing down and not doing rapid release. The other benefits are focusing on one book and really, really drilling in to the marketing strategies behind that book. So if I were talking to Dr. Dr. Howard right now, I would say, look at the book that is currently being promoted by your publisher, see the kinds of things they are doing, and use every last publicity that they can give you. Use every last interview, use every single bit of momentum that they push your way to leverage it into another opportunity and make that one book your whole life and take that one book and stretch its sales window much further. Because what a publisher will love to see and will give you social currency is a book that continues to sell beyond the window when it is typically considered marketable. Publishers have a very brief window of marketing a book. And in the case of Dr. Howard, where they're marketing it beyond that window, they've already seen that the sales are robust. And so they want to continue to feed their bottom line because it's all about money for them. They want to continue to feed their bottom line with a book that sells well. If you can buoy that by adding into it. Say you're on a podcast because your publisher got you an appointment with a large podcast to interview, then ask the host at the end, hey, I know that my publisher set me up with this interview. If you like this discussion, who should I be talking to? And then throw that back to the publisher and say, hey, I got this name from so-and-so. They think I'd be a great fit for this podcast. They think I'd be a great fit for this radio show. They think I'd be a great fit for X number of things. Use those people. And I say the word use, I guess, in both senses. Yes, definitely use them. They're not your friends, so they are a connection. Maybe you can build a friendship, but make sure that you don't walk out of any opportunities without getting more names and future opportunities. You can't get hurt by asking. The worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to say, yeah, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. One thing I do really like is there's a great sales guy out there named Grant Cardone. I like this one because I've seen it work time and again as someone will say, yeah, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that I would recommend. And all you have to do, this is the weirdest thing, because literally you're asking the same question a different way, is you say, oh, okay, no problem. I mean, if you were going to think of somebody, who might that be? And it's like you turn it into the subjunctive mood and suddenly they're like, yeah, I guess if I were going to say somebody, I would say so-and-so. And then suddenly you have a name and you can say, oh, this podcast host recommended I reach out to you. Or again, throw it back to your publisher who maybe has a little bit more leverage than you do. They don't know everybody. And that's the thing, is that they don't know where opportunities lie. They have this, they're like brains. They have grooves. They have synaptic connections in a manner of speaking where they know who to go to, but they don't know who they don't know. And that's why getting out further than the publisher to start finding out where can I leverage opportunities matters. The more high impact opportunities that you get, the longer you can stretch that window with the book. So instead of doing rapid release, really focus on the book that's already got a little bit of wind in its sails and push it harder, put more wind in its sails, put more fuel in the engine, get more rows on the boat, rowers, I don't know. What is author marketing mastery through optimization, you ask? I'm gonna tell you, it's the best way for us authors to make a living selling our books. Are you tired of hearing gurus tell you your book is only good enough to be a lead magnet for services? Are you tired of feeling like you have to be a slave to social media and then frustrated when the time you spend doesn't actually help you sell books? I was too, until I found Ammo. Ammo is the only program that reliably produces results, and it works for anyone. Is it hard work? You bet. Do you have to overcome some of your own prejudices to make Ammo work for you? Absolutely. But rather than being another program that rah-rah shishkoom boss tries to get you emotionally excited only to offer unclear methods, Ammo shows you how to design profitable ads step by step through a unique, highly tested and targeted formula. The founder, Steve Piper, is a data-loving, formula-driven author who escaped the kingdom of Amazon to build a platform for himself, where he sold directly to his readers and built a loyal following and millions of copies sold. With Ammo, you know who's reading your books, how to contact them, and what they want to read next.
If you've always been frustrated with Amazon's wall of mystery, of not knowing who's reading your books, and losing 50 to 70% of your hard-earned money that you're making through sales, Ammo solves all of those problems by putting you in the driver's seat and showing you how to fulfill your books directly to your readership. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.
And if you are going to focus on any kind of rapid release, focus instead on the rapid release of public appearances. This is by far the biggest return on your effort, and it is to have as many interviews and appearances, speaking opportunities, blog interviews everywhere all at the same time. The more that you have come out in a short period of time, the larger the domino effect becomes, and it is the most exponential growth you can get. I'm not speaking from personal experience, but I am speaking from deep research. All of the biggest and best marketers out there will focus on the domino and cascade effect that happens when you are able to be everywhere all at the same time. It's what happens when a post goes viral. If you get one post to go viral, you'll notice that you probably get a whole bunch of sales in a short period of time. And I'm talking truly viral, not 100,000 or 200,000 views. I'm talking millions of views. A video or some kind of post, mostly it's videos these days or audio clips, I guess. But you get something like that that goes truly viral and you will see a surge. That's because when it goes viral, the people who see it again and again and again, and they get the sense that they are missing out. That FOMO is what makes them buy. So the same person who can see your reel, like your reel, share your reel, comment on your reel, will not buy your book until they keep seeing that same reel from different people. And then they have this sense of like, oh, that was really cool. And I also must be missing out. That is what happens when something goes viral. You've probably noticed this before, but when you're scrolling on TikTok or you're scrolling on Instagram, you tend to see the same material over and over and over again. And those are the ones that are going viral. When you look, they have several hundred thousand likes and a bunch of comments. Those ones have caught wind. When you can do that, not just on Instagram, not just on TikTok, but also through podcast media, when you suddenly appear on the Rich Roll podcast and the Lewis Howes podcast, I'm forgetting the exact name of it, when you can appear on all of these podcasts at the same time, you start to get this building momentum where people think, I better dive in, I better jump in, I have to get this before it's too late. That is where you will see massive success. And you can't do that with rapid release. I hate to tell you this, but you can't do it through rapid release. Nobody wants to take on three books at a time. And there's still this whole part of the world, as much as we don't want it to be the case, that is influenced by traditional publishing and the message that traditional publishing sends out there, which is that rapid release equals lower quality. Now, I know that's not entirely true, but I wonder if it might have some impact on how things are going. If it takes you a year to write a book and you wait 3 years and write three books, is there a part of you that starts to get a little bit eager to get things out? Do you maybe cut a corner? Do you maybe put a book away before it's fully ready? I would look back at Alex Hormozi, who talks about his books, $100 million offers and $100 million leads. And he talks about writing the book and doing another draft and cutting and making it shorter and making it clearer and making it more concise. The things that he does to take a good book to being a great book to being an indispensable book for your life have really worked. I've read both of those books multiple, many times. They're short, but they are like diamond after diamond after diamond. The guy knows what he's talking about. talking about. And so really, I will steal from him when I say rapid release is not as effective as massive promotion. Massive promotion is the most effective strategy, and I put all of my eggs in that basket. Now, is it true that I fairly quickly released two books following The Nine Lives of Marvita Longhi? Yes, it is. Do I think that The Eight Ball Magic of Susie Q is a fantastic book? Why? Certainly I do. Do I think that The 24/7 of a Russian Named Ruskov is also a great book? You betcha. I love it. But I am struggling, like the death of me, to get The Six Sorrows of Shohei Matsui into shape where I want a reader to read it. And so it is going slow. And I am not forcing myself to push past it. I had an outline. I had to restructure the outline. Thought I liked the new one. Now I'm restructuring yet again because it doesn't quite fit my vision. And yes, I could sit on all of these books. Again, I'm not saying this isn't an option or I'm not aware of it or that you couldn't be aware of it as well. I could sit on all these books. But what I realized was that in terms of promoting The Nine Lives of Marvita Longhi, the best way for me to do that was actually to have two other books with it. And so this is where I would say that a rapid light release strategy could work for you if you are self-published. Not so much the case if you're already traditionally published, but if you are self-published and you don't have any traditional deals or irons in the fire or anything like that, go ahead and get some books out. Don't necessarily rapid release them like we talked about, but try, work hard and see if you can get some books out. See if you can do this and be proud of the books you have out there and know that they are top quality, that you can stand by them and love them, and that you're never going to say, you know, I really rushed that one, which happens. It happens even in the traditional publishing world. There's a amazing author named Paul Harding who wrote a Pulitzer Prize winning novel, Tinkers. It was so good. He got a huge advance to write another book, and they put him on a deadline that he really struggled with. So he published a book called Enon. That is kind of like the traditional publishing world's rapid release. They wanted to capitalize on his popularity. And sorry, Paul, I think you do know this, but Enon was shit. It was a really bad book. It showed how glaringly awful every author is in early drafts when they're wrestling with what they actually have to say. But if you can get the books out quickly and they're great and they're quality, then do that, because having more books is a great way to leverage opportunities. In my case, something I've been talking a lot about recently is attending comic expos, craft fairs, culture expos, anything like that, where I can set up a table and sell some books. And in order to be profitable in those situations, it is really helpful to be able to sell that three book deal for $40. Each transaction brings back more money. And so I need fewer hits to make up the cost of travel, the cost of booking the table, the cost of materials, et cetera, so on and so forth. So it can be really helpful to have a backlist of books that you can sell. If you have books that are written and you can edit them up and get them ready to go, that's what I'm doing with Buckshot Blast and The Goldfish Getaway, getting it ready to go to some shows so that this summer when I'm at the bigger places like Strawberry Festival in Cabot, Arkansas, I can sell even more books, four for 50. Every time I increase my offering, I can increase my profitability and do more. So that is the benefit. But am I worried about Amazon and hacking the algorithm and getting more visibility that way? Not really. I'm not really worried about it. I'm worried about building my list. I'm worried about having quality people on my list. I am fairly ruthless about paring my list down when I notice that people are not opening, not reading, not reacting, not responding. I'm okay having a smaller list of people who take action. And I feel that way about Amazon as well, is if I can teach the algorithm who to show my books to through a variety of methods, then the rest of it will take care of itself. Focus on the promotion, focus on getting in front of big names, take big swings, and don't take no's. So the substitute for rapid release is rapid iteration of outreach. Rapid iteration of outreach will lead to the most sales, the most success, and the most future opportunities. Reach out today to Lewis Howes if you have something to say to him. Reach out today to Alex Hormozi if you have something to say to him, or Layla Hormozi. Reach out to these people that you admire who have giant platforms. Reach out to Joe Rogan. You're not going to get on his podcast, but reach out to him. Practice that. And when you don't hear back from Joe Rogan, when you don't hear back from Alex Hormozi, schedule a follow-up and do it more quickly than you would expect. Reach out 2 weeks later. Be like, "Dear Alex, didn't hear back from you on my last podcast pitch. Would love to get the opportunity to share with your audience X, Y, and Z. I think it could be transformational for them, and nobody can say it quite how I can. Here's why." Keep it short. This is a totally different podcast episode that where we can talk about how to outreach. Right now, what I want to cover is that rapid iteration of outreach. Do it more frequently than you think you should, because the worst possible thing that happens is the actual person reaches back out and said, "I got your emails. I'll let you know." We're living in a world right now, folks, where people don't respond. You send these emails, you send these messages over Instagram, wherever it might be. You send these things out into the world and you don't hear back. You don't hear back and you think it means that they actually read your message, but guess what? They probably didn't. They probably never saw it. Probably got buried in that file. If you open up Instagram right now, you'll notice that there is a little section that's kind of hard to see that says requests. Some people will never even click on the requests. Some people have social media person who handles all of their social media, and maybe they do filter through the requests, but at their leisure. Maybe they see your request and it's the wrong moment. You have to continue to reach out until you get a response. Assume that they haven't heard from you until you get a response. And if they really want you to stop reaching out, they will respond to you. So what? There's plenty of bridges to burn, folks. There are so many bridges to burn. It's ridiculous. And here's the secret that very few people are talking about. A bridge burned today is not a bridge burned forever. It's like people act as if burning bridges is a forever thing. But the truth is, and I'm going to illustrate this in a real way that shows what a jackass I can be. I was doing something called Books for Brews. You probably remember me talking about it if you've been listening to the podcast for a while. I wanted to promote The Nine Lives of Marva DeLonghi. It's a book that's set locally in Omaha, and I intentionally use real locations throughout Omaha that I personally love and have frequented. One of those is Jake's Cigar Bar. Another is Block 16. If you're ever in Omaha, you have to eat at Block 16. They're amazing. I'll be doing an event with them later this fall. And there's a host of other real places, hotels, restaurants, bars, all kinds of places that feature in the book. And so I thought I should do Books for Brews and basically sell my books at these places where the actual store is featured in the book. And that would be a lot of fun for them. They might help me promote. It'd be great. And I wanted to get on the local news. So I sent out a press release to every news media outlet I could think of, from radio to TV to online, anywhere I could think of, I sent out press releases. Do you know how many actually bit? Zero. I didn't get a single person to respond to my press release. I didn't follow up on any of my press releases. I didn't take any of my own advice from this episode. I didn't know then what I know now. I'm always learning, and that's great, and I hope you are too. Nobody responded. Except I reached out to a few foodies, people that I had found in the community, and one of them, Dan Hoppen, reached out and said he would attend the event at Block 16, that he thought he would come by. When I wrote the email, I wrote the email in such a way as to say, like, "Would you consider having me on your podcast to talk about this Books for Brews thing that I am doing?" So when he said he thought about attending, I was like, clearly he didn't read this, or he's trying to like get by without making a commitment. And it peeved me, and I had had no success. I had really failed, and I was embarrassed and ashamed, which is common for me. I'm always embarrassed when I do stupid things or it doesn't work out the way I expected in my mind. I'm reactive. I'm emotional. And I think I just responded back with a lot of snark. And not only did I respond back with snark, I chose to do it publicly through Facebook on a post that he did about something else. I can't remember what exactly I said, but it was so passive aggressive and just awful. And he called me out, and then he emailed me, and he called me out there, and he was like, you know, what a horrible thing to do. He just rightfully put me in my place. And I was so angry. I was really, really angry. And I felt, you know, what I thought was righteous indignation. But the truth is, he was right. I had reached out to him once. he'd taken time out of his day to get back to me and show a modicum of interest. Now, I don't know if he would have come or not, but what I do know is that after a couple of days of sitting on it, I knew I had done something wrong. And I went back to him and I apologized. And understandably, he didn't think I was being terribly genuine. And I reiterated the apology. I didn't get aggressive and say, fine, if you want to accept an apology, you know, you suck. Instead, I just really took a deep breath, centered myself, and I said, I meant it when I apologized. I'm not looking for anything from you at this point. I know that I wronged you, and I sincerely mean it when I apologize. And for quite a while, there was nothing there. But as I was scrolling Facebook over the coming months, I would occasionally see a post by him and realized not only did I find him to be a valuable voice in the Omaha community because he highlights restaurants, but I liked the things that he was doing. And so I would comment on his posts and just be like positive generally. I wasn't trying to get anything out of it. But what has happened is that I have started to have positive engagements with him. So a bridge that was burned is being rebuilt. Oh my goodness. Did you see that coming? Did you know that that's how things worked? If your house burns down, is it gone forever? If the bridge into your little island town burns down, do you think that they're just going to be like, well, that bridge is burned. I guess you guys are never leaving the island again. No. And that's why this is so important. Go ahead and burn your bridges. It's okay. Burn them because they actually can be rebuilt. And it may be at a great cost. And I can't tell you that Dan is necessarily going to ever have me on his podcast to promote jack shit. But I can tell you that at this moment in life, if I ran into Dan on the street, he and I would have a positive and pleasant experience. And I can promise you, he actually knows who I am. Isn't that interesting? He knows me. He could pick me out of a crowd and be like, there's that guy. He saw pictures. He saw different video and he heard different elements of podcasts and things like that. He was exposed to me. And now he knows who I am. So that bridge that I burned, it actually, I don't know, like ended up being a really positive event. So rapid iteration is the strategy that will work. If I had said, awesome, Dan, I would love to see you at this event. I had asked about the podcast. Do you think that's something that we could at least discuss? Do you have 5 minutes for me to pitch why I think that this would be a great fit for your show? He might have said no, but that, again, that wouldn't have been a burned bridge. That would have just been a, like, maybe this isn't a good fit. However, again, he knows me. Rapid iteration. Reach out to him again in the future, maybe 3 weeks later, and be like, I know you're not interested in Books for Brews. Would you be interested in this? Would you be interested in this? Who do you know that might be interested in this? All these kind of questions. Rapid iteration. Don't let the dog go. Hold it by the tail, and as it circles, you circle faster. You know, wrestle the alligator. Anyways, metaphors. Sometimes they're good, sometimes not so much. That's what I've got for you right now is rapid release can work. There are some benefits. On the whole, I'm going to be the one who says, think bigger than Amazon. Think bigger than Amazon. And I'll finish by teasing an upcoming episode that I'm very excited to release to you. It is the second time that I have interviewed Steve Piper, founder of AMMO, Author Marketing Mastery Through Optimization. He has version 4 about ready to drop, and it is going to be amazing. The things he talked about in that interview, it just got me so reinvigorated to dive back into AMMO and to figure it out. I've lately even backed off a little bit myself as I have struggled to align my message with my advertising. And I think that a lot of the stuff that he's doing there is going to help people like me who have struggled to make the best of AMMO. I've learned so much. I would never, ever do it differently. And that includes all of the failed ads that I've run. I guess I will say I've been profitable. For those of you who are thinking about AMMO and listening to this podcast, I've been profitable for the most part. I just actually finished doing taxes with my wife. She hates me for all of the money I spend in all the different places. We need to kind of shore up that process a bit. But what we saw is that I was down $443 on the year for advertisements. I spent over $12,000in advertising, and I lost $443. So at that level, probably I am a success story to most people. To spend $12,000 and only lose 400 of those is fairly good, but I want to get to the point where I'm actually profitable, where I spend $12,000 and make $24,000, because that is a very real possibility and actually fairly modest for a lot of people who do this program and others and are successful with their advertising. But the point that I want to make here is, as I was talking with Steve, the point he kept coming back to and would not back away from was that there is no replacement for hard work. Is grueling, enduring, quitless hard work. We're looking for some kind of magic potion to make things go well. And there are some things that I would argue do shortcut the process a little bit. Amazon is not that process. So when rapid release is confined to Amazon and you are depending on Amazon for your income, you're not thinking big enough. Promote one book, make it big, keep pushing it. And only if you see that that book literally cannot sell, that people are just not interested, that you somehow completely miss the boat, you just keep promoting that book till you figure out how to sell it. Because once you figure out how to sell it, you will have learned something that you can carry on with you for the long haul. If you're thinking about Amazon and that's all, the bigger you go in the rapid release world, you are thinking too small. So get bigger, think bigger, get out there, sell some books. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday with another episode, an interview on TRBM Ammo Edition. Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening? I'm 4 books into a 9-book series, and every single day lately, I find myself thinking, boy, it would be great if I had some central location for all of my notes, all of my plot points, character names, family lineages, you name it. I wish it was in one place because, let's be honest, the way that I am using Microsoft Word as a word processor and have 55 different documents to keep track of all of the series details that I need to access, I'm taking more time opening up files wondering, why did I name this one that? Why did I name this one that? And not getting the information I need. Enter Scrivener. You guys know that I do not advertise for things unless A, I'm using them myself, and B, I think that you could up your game, sell more books, do better marketing, and get yourself in the game better. And that is why I am now partnered with Scrivener. If you use the link in the show notes, you get a 30-day free trial, and then you can sign up as well for a discount. Click the link in the show notes to learn more.